The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast, episode 175. You know the drill. If you are on YouTube, make sure you like this video. Make sure you subscribe and share with somebody who will find this interesting. And if you're on the audio side, make sure you leave us that 5-star rating and review. It takes less than 30 seconds and it helps us out a whole lot and helps us to spread this message all over the world. If you do leave a 5-star rating and review, take a screenshot and email me your submission. And my email is in the show notes and I'll reply back by sending you a free training on how to find and evaluate rental properties. So if you're somebody who's not sure how to calculate the numbers, the cash flow, and all those things, this is definitely a great training that'll help you get started. So I look forward to hearing from you all. All right, we got a lot to talk about today. If you've been paying any attention, you'll see that I recently posted on Instagram a post about the fact that the Dallas City Council has voted to ban single-family short-term rentals from single-family home communities. And so this is something that could have a tremendous impact. And we got a whole lot of comments on both sides of the table on this particular topic, which I think is great. I think it's great for us to see various opinions. And so what I'm going to do today, I wanted to have this episode to be able to dive a little bit deeper into more of the details and context around what might be happening and why and my thoughts on it. Then I'm also going to actually talk about and bring up some of the specific comments that were made on Instagram on both sides so we can hear everyone's thoughts. So let's jump right in. So as I mentioned, the Dallas City Council voted to change the zoning rules to ban short-term rentals from single-family home communities. If this goes through, short-term rentals will still be allowed in multifamily home communities. And so the council voted also 13-0 to change the city code to make it mandatory for these properties to register annually with the city, pay various fees and taxes, adhere to occupancy and noise limits, and a number of other rules and regulations that might be coming down the pipeline. One thing that I thought was interesting is that another requirement that is being proposed is that the property has someone who can get to the property within an hour if there are any issues to address any emergencies and things like that. What that leads me to believe is that they want to restrict those who are not local from having short-term rentals. Because if you live, let's say 4 or 5 hours away within the state of Texas or in some other state, it's going to be pretty hard for you to get there within an hour. I'm not sure if you can have somebody on your team who can get there within an hour. I'm not sure of the details of it, but it leads me to believe they're trying to enforce some sort of restriction on folks who are not local. That's the way that it looks like to me. Something else I want to mention is that all of this is proposed, and the last step is that the regulations need to be reviewed by a council committee by June 2025. That's 2 years from now. I don't know how long these kind of things typically take. I don't know what all is involved. However, what I will say is that if you do have a short-term rental in Dallas or anywhere, it's important for you to evaluate the profitability of that property outside of just short-term rentals. So you should be looking at midterm rentals. So think travel nurses or business professionals traveling for several months and your typical long-term rentals. Ideally, it could work in all of those situations and you can make some sort of profit, but I would discourage anyone from looking at something strictly based on if it's viable as a short-term rental, because things can change, market conditions can change. It might become saturated to have short-term rentals in that particular city, and the rules and regulations might change. So you want to make sure that you can survive in each of the scenarios and not be in a position where you have to sell the home and maybe not even make a profit because you went in solely for the purpose of short-term rentals. So that's something to keep in mind. And, you know, Dallas is not the first city to propose something like this. You know, this has been proposed in cities around the country, and there's been murmurs of it happening even more. So it wouldn't surprise me if these type of things take place in various cities across the country. Something else that I found pretty interesting is that a lot of the short-term rental property owners in Dallas are in favor of some level of restrictions and regulation from the government. However, the general consensus is that all of these things I mentioned that are being proposed is a bit too much in their opinion. So it sounds like they're open to finding some sort of middle ground as it relates to short-term rental regulation, but not to the extent of what's being proposed. And, you know, something that is also interesting, I mentioned before that what's being proposed is that you have to register with the city every year. So it's actually something that they're supposed to do now. So as a short-term rental host in Dallas, you're supposed to register with the city, pay certain taxes and fees and things of that nature. However, it's not something that's being enforced. So maybe that's something that'll be good. Maybe that's some level of regulation that will at least give them an accurate count of the number of short-term rentals, if people are complying and things of that nature. Up next, we're going to get into some data on the number of short-term rentals within Dallas, and I'll share my thoughts on that. So as of May, there are 1,800 registered properties registered as short-term rentals in Dallas, and the city estimates that there could be an additional 1,300 that are not being accounted for, that are not registered. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Now, the next level of that is there is a website called AirDNA. It's a data analytics website for short-term rentals. They produce a variety of data for those who are looking to enter the short-term rental market in a particular city. And they actually estimate that there are 5,500 active short-term rentals in Dallas. So there's quite a big discrepancy between the properties that are registered and those that are not. And so I'm curious about how many of those would fall into the category of being inside of a single family home neighborhood. And Dallas officials actually shared that of those that are registered, so remember, 1,800 are registered as of May, they basically said 95% of those will be banned if these new regulations are approved. So that's substantial. And I have to believe that if there are 5,000 or so, a sizable portion are probably in those single family home neighborhoods, which is going to cause a ripple effect if they're all banned. You know, a variety of things could be the outcome of that. But again, if you fall into that category of a short-term rental host anywhere, especially in Dallas, you need to make a plan B right now. You need to figure out an exit strategy, another way to generate income. Like I said, midterm, maybe long-term rentals, or see if it's time for you to just get out the game completely, which would not be the ideal situation. But, you know, I would encourage you to think of a plan B. And something else I want to address in addition to some more data is that a lot of people think about short-term rentals as being noisy, trashy, disturbing the community, taking up all the parking spots. And that was a lot of the commentary that I did receive on Instagram. And I do also understand that a lot of that is based on people's personal experience, and your personal experience many times dictates your opinion on something. So I definitely understand the perspective of those who feel that way. And I'll also add, the city of Dallas conducted a study to basically compare the 911 and 311 calls for short-term rentals, potential short-term rentals and other residences. And they looked at things like parking complaints, litter, and noise complaints. What they found was that they counted 2,600 short-term rentals in the city of Dallas, and 88% of them were not tied to any complaints. So basically, out of the 2,600, 88% had no complaints. And so what that leads me to believe is that the majority of short-term rentals do not actually have issues, and perhaps do not have issues that the neighbors deemed serious enough to report and call in. And second, that a small portion of the total number of short-term rentals are actually causing the problems. Another stat they mentioned is that 123 rentals had a history of two or more calls. So it seems like a small number of those that are at least accounted for, who knows how many are not accounted for, but a small number of those that are accounted for are actually causing the issues and actually being repeat offenders pretty much. And so I think that's something to keep in mind. A lot of people tend to bucket all short-term rentals in the same category. And, you know, I don't think that's really fair. I think we got to look at things from a holistic perspective and look at the overall picture of things. So next, I'm going to read several opinions and comments from the Instagram post. So folks who are in favor of this going through and folks who are against this going through. So I'll start with my opinion. I personally think it's unfair if, for example, I am a short-term rental host and my guests never make any noise. My guests are respectful. They clean. They don't disturb anybody. And they just kind of go out their business and mind their business. For me to be penalized for what a small number of people are doing, I think is pretty unfair. You know, I think people should be able to do what they want with their property. If they wanted to sit vacant, they should be able to allow to do that. If they want to have a short-term or midterm rental and they abide by all the rules and don't bother anybody and pay their fees and all that stuff, then they should be allowed to do that. You know, I don't think someone else should have a say in that. That's my personal opinion. So we'll see what you guys thought. So here's the first one. As a homeowner in a highly desirable neighborhood, I absolutely support restricting a transient short-term rental population. We enjoy knowing our neighbors, not the randoms. There are many communities that are against short-term rentals because it makes less properties available for those who actually want to reside for a longer term. A lot of neighborhoods also deal with excessive noise and partying complaints, so I get it. So I appreciate this particular comment. And you know, there is something to be said for knowing your neighbors. I'm sure there are people who purchase properties in certain communities, anticipating that they'll be able to build community and have that continuity and have that trust they can build with their neighbors, knowing that they know who they are at minimum. So, you know, I can understand that perspective. And, you know, I can also understand people that feel that short-term rentals are taking away the ability for people to rent a particular place on a longer term basis, which is an issue which is a conversation within itself that we'll probably get into on another show. And then, you know, the partying and noise complaints, I mean, that's a typical concern people have. So, you know, I can understand that as well. I don't think anybody would want that near them, especially the noise and the parties and stuff. All right, so here's the next one. It's a strong stance to take for sure. Unfortunately, short-term rentals that allow overnight or very short stays erode the fabric of neighborhoods. The thought of not knowing who your neighbors will be from day to day when you have small children can be unnerving. Short-term rentals are essentially operating as commercial use in residential zoning districts. That wasn't the intent of the zoning code of these cities when they were written. Perhaps there can be a middle ground established, like a minimal number of night stay for at least 5 days, noise meters installed for monitoring, or after hours noise and party house prohibition. Establishing parameters like these might make the business model more palatable. This was an interesting comment. I think it's balanced, which I appreciate, and does present some potential solutions. And so, you know, again, similar to people wanting to know their neighbors, you know, we spoke about that. I get that. Now, as for the comment about the intent of zoning codes not being this, of course, you know, I don't think there was any anticipation back whenever these zoning codes were created that there would be such a boom in short-term rentals or that it would be something people would even consider or think would exist. So, you know, we're definitely in different times now. So I do agree that that was not the intent of the zoning codes, which is fair. But I do like the proposal of a minimum number of nights to stay, which is 5 days this person's proposing, which I think is fair. I guess there's some level of continuity and perhaps a lower likelihood of issues if there's fewer people and less turnover. So that's like, if you're staying for 5 days, it's basically like one person a week, one guest a week or however many people they might have. So I think that's a good point. Noise meters, I think, is good to be able to measure like the noise people are making. I think that's good. This is a fair comment. I can see where this person's coming from. Now, this one I thought was quite interesting. So this one says, yes, because short-term rentals lower the value of properties, so the neighbors that are not participating must suffer. Most people today who purchase short-term rentals are investors who have no interest in the community. This is a touchy subject, but this is why we have hotels. So this is quite interesting. You know, I do recall responding and asking this person if they may have any reliable sources that show a direct correlation between the presence of short-term rentals and the value of properties. I personally don't think there is a correlation. And the reason for that is because when an appraiser is going to appraise a particular property, they're looking at different factors of similar properties, but they're not looking for the presence of short-term rentals. That is not one of the things that an appraiser is measuring when they are appraising a property. So I think this is a misconception, to be honest. If anybody out there has any data or any reports I can look at that can prove that point incorrect, please send it to me. I'd be happy to look at it. But, you know, I thought this was interesting. And then also the comment about short-term investors not having interest in the community. I think that's a pretty broad stroke and a pretty large assumption to make, because if the community does well, then everybody does well. If the community does well, then your short-term rental does well. If the community thrives, then so does your short-term rental, if you're operating it properly and you're making sure your guests are doing what they're supposed to do, not disturbing people and things of that nature. So that I don't know about. All right. So we'll look at a couple of opinions against this, and then we'll wrap up. So this comment says another way to restrict small business, which I agree with, because the reality of it is a lot of people have this image of landlords as being these filthy rich people who are just trying to take advantage of everybody. And while I'm sure there are some who fall in that category, statistically, the majority of landlords are mom and pop, which means they might have a property or two or maybe even a couple more, but they're basically just trying to supplement their income and make a little bit of extra money. That is the majority of people. And so Dallas estimates that based on the properties that are registered, 95% of them would be banned if this thing goes through. And those are a lot of people who may not be ready to pivot to midterm or long-term rentals, right? Which is why I'm encouraging anybody who's in the short-term rental space to be ready to pivot and to run those numbers for other scenarios just in case. But I don't think that, I do think this is going to restrict small business. Most of these Airbnb businesses are probably small businesses. Most people don't have 10, 20 Airbnb units in a particular city. That is most likely a small percentage of people out there. All right, this next one says, I live in a great neighborhood. As long as the property is being kept up, I don't care. People like to involve themselves in things that aren't their business. If people mind their business, drink water, and just be kind to their neighbors, for the most part, the neighborhood will be fine. Water is very important, so I agree with that. But I think this is a fair point. Like I said, Dallas did a study and 88% of the short-term rentals had no issues. So that leads me to believe most people are just minding their own business, the guests and the neighbors, and there are not issues in many cases. And so, I think that is valid and I understand where this person's coming from. And the last one is, some people who rather not have short-term rentals will be dealing with foreclosures on their blocks and boarded up houses. Short-term rentals give homeowners the opportunity to make money. Interest rates are high and home prices are high. Give homeowners options. And, I do hope that anyone who's in a situation and you live in Dallas and this thing goes through and your short-term rental is banned, I do really hope that you can pivot and maybe go into mid-term rentals or long-term rentals and still make money, or at least be able to cover your expenses for now, and that you don't get in a situation where you cannot pay your mortgage. And so, again, it's just important to look at different strategies and not rely on one exit strategy. So I hope that that does not lead to people being in foreclosure. These days there's a lot of options to not lose your home. So hopefully nobody falls into that position. I understand where this person comes from too. All right. So hopefully that was helpful. Hopefully that gave you a bit more context into what's going on. And again, I appreciate all of your comments and all of your feedback. There were several hundred comments. I just picked out six that we could talk about today. And so I appreciate all of you for your contribution and your feedback. And I look forward to hearing from you all soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.